Welcome to the Most High Show. My name is Christian, and joining me today is my wife of way too long, Leslie. I'm stuck with her. Also joining us is Charlie Brown and Trina, and they're going to be sharing their recovery journey. We're doing it a little different because we're talking about the kind of entanglement of love and recovery and addiction, and I think it's a very important topic because I think a lot of people deal with this. And so this is all coming up, and we're looking forward to it on the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, so, you know, I've had this topic of love and recovery, you know, sobriety, sex, and dating, right? It's a hot topic. Like, people have various kind of opinions on it, right? But there's kind of like an adage in the recovery rooms that, you know, if you're in early recovery, you don't get into a relationship. You don't start something, right? Mm-hmm. And I can understand why somebody would say that, right? Because you're beginning the journey, you're kind of discovering who you are, you're maybe reconciling your past, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And so then you get introduced to another person, and that can sometimes make things complicated, right? But for you guys, it's a little different because you guys were already a couple mm-hmm. when you started active using. So tell me a little bit about when you first started dating and when did drugs and alcohol get introduced into the relationship?
Okay. We were 15 and I had actually already experimented with some drugs and he had as well before we met. And I don't know if there was really even a time period that I'm pretty sure it was right away. With weed and drinking and things like that.
Yes.
Right?
The two of you together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So immediately was a part of the dynamic of your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was the way you guys connected mm-hmm. or something maybe. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And it sounds like she introduced it to your world or were you already?
I think I introduced it to, well, I had the connections. So, yeah. Yeah, I think we had a common denominator of we like getting high. We like escaping reality.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go back. You guys met when you guys were 15 years old.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so then you guys met together and experimenting with drugs, but not necessarily addicted to drugs. Right.
Right.
And so during high school, it was just all fun. Fun. And I think you guys mentioned that you guys broke up and then got together, back together after a car accident.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
You want to go?
You, go ahead.
Well, we were dating, going to homecoming as friends. We got the keys to my friend who was driving mom's car for homecoming and speeding on the highway, hydroplane, hit a tree. And paramedics came and took us both in the ambulance and made a comment about, oh, this is cute. I've never had a couple in my ambulance before. Mm. So we weren't a couple then, but soon after we had that connection of the wreck and then we became more than friends. We started dating at that point.
Mm-hmm. Three days after. And we were on North Point Parkway, not the highway.
When we wrecked. Okay.
Well, you told him to tell the story.
I did, but get it right.
Did I say highway?
You did, yeah. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was an EMT who, mm-hmm. it was like a fairy EMT who brought your love together again.
Yes. Thank you, EMT. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So you guys get back together mm-hmm. and you're still in high school and you're still kind of doing school. And did both of you graduate high school?
Yes.
Somehow, yes. I don't know how, but yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I imagine, you know, get out of high school, you don't have that kind of holding you down. How does your relationship and your relationship to drugs and alcohol change after high school?
So he was actually a grade ahead of me. And so he graduates and he goes to Georgia Southern to go to college. I had actually gotten kicked out of my house, and because I was a couple of times, but this last time I was already 18. And so I was able to withdraw myself from the school I was in and enroll myself in Milton, which is where he graduated. And I lived in that school district with a friend. I think the teachers either felt bad for me, which is why I was able to graduate, or it's because they didn't have any other adult besides me to call if I wasn't at school. Because I remember being like, I would go to Georgia Southern a lot and stay with him, or he would come and skip school and we'd, you know, hang out together. And of course it was always partying, you know?
Right. Why did they feel sorry for you?
Well, because I didn't really have any parents, you know, like I lived with my aunt and uncle after my parents died, when I was very young, and, I was never at school, so I don't know how I graduated, you know, somehow I was passing my classes. I don't know how, but so it's kind of been not a joke, but I just always said maybe they felt bad for me is why I graduated. Cause I don't know how I graduated. But yeah. I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you finish college?
No, I did not.
Okay. So back and forth. And so are you guys using actively when you're together, like always, or are there parts and periods of time when you're not using and you're just together?
I think that was always our third wheel, like drugs, partying. We're together, yeah, but we're going to always party together. So, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was always a part of the dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fun. It was interesting. It was something. It was like, it almost had to be done because that's what we did. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like we weren't trying to be sober. It was, this was, we're young and dumb and
that was our life.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. And we should say, like, that's not the way you're living now.
No, not at all.
Right. Mm-mm. So how, what's like right now, what's life like now for you guys that you're.
It is way different than I ever thought that it would be. I, for myself, like I had just, you know, accepted the fact that like I was going to die an addict. This is how I was going to die. I can't stop. And today it's nothing like that. Like I make sure that my recovery comes first before our relationship. I spend time with my girlfriends and with, you know, I give back to the program I went to and do service work. And it's important because before, like we were so enmeshed and toxic and codependent and like, I felt like I couldn't breathe without him. And I don't ever want to be like that again, ever, because it was miserable. You know, I didn't realize it until I was able to kind of look clearly back at it and see what it was, you know, what it was, and grow into a whole person myself. And so it's really important for me to have my own time and for him to have his own time. And then we have time for each other.
Yeah.
You know?
So Trina, for you, like realizing, because as you're getting clean from substances and then you're seeing this, this also this, the substance of Charlie, right? This connection that you had, what was that like and how, like what came first, or was it kind of like all meshed in together for you to begin healing and identifying that you are your own person and that you would be okay as an individual?
So I, like I, both of us have been to multiple treatment programs, and this last one, when I finally surrendered, the best thing that the program I went to did for me was not allow me to talk to my own husband because he was still in active addiction. And of course, at first I was like, how dare you? He's my husband. We're married, blah, blah, blah. But it was the best thing that they could have ever done, because from that, like I was able to, of course it was hard, you know, like I would call him a couple times and I'd tell him myself and I'd get in trouble. And, but like slowly but surely I realized that like these people really care for me. They know what's best for me, even when I don't. And I could like see the other half of my body growing back and growing into a whole person. And there was a lot of work around my relationship with Richard and my, or Charlie Brown. and of course, you know, first and foremost, and most importantly, because I was the one in treatment there, there was a lot of work with my, you know, with myself and how to become whole and what why.
How long were you in treatment?
This last time it was almost a year.
Almost a year. Yeah. And how long ago was that that you were in treatment?
Let's see. I graduated treatment March 3rd, 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been clean since.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So that's an extent. I mean, that's a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Almost a year mm-hmm. of continual yeah. growth.
That's what I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so during that whole year, you didn't see Richard Charlie Brown at all?
I did. Like after, I don't know, like 6 months, 8 months, while he finally got into treatment and was doing well. And I'll let you tell that part.
So she's in treatment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're out in the streets running around, mm-hmm. acting a fool.
Mm-hmm.
When do the wheels fall off for you that you're like, okay, I need to do something?
I think for me, I had to back up because I went to treatment from jail for the same program, the men's campus, right? The extension in Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that, and like I had stayed clean and stayed sober, and the whole time she's sober on paper, like to a judge, she's sober. But she's prescribed all the good shit.
Methadone, Xanax,
you know, Adderall. Methadone, Xanax, Adderall, like all the, I mean, she's getting high, basically, in my opinion.
I was.
So, yeah, it just, it didn't work. You know, me going to meetings and sponsor and sponsee, that kind of stuff, when my wife that I'm hanging out with too is, you know, sober. So,
right.
But yeah, this time it was, she's in treatment. I just got out of jail again, just did like 6 straight months. So the last thing I wanted at that point was to be locked back down and told what to do. And,
yeah.
you know, I wasn't ready. So she did her thing and I did mine for about 7-8 months.
Yeah. What was the turning point for you though to get, did you go into treatment eventually?
I did. Yeah.
What was the turning point for you? Do you remember like what made you kind of relent and go, okay, fine, I'll do something about this?
So she went in March of 18. I had OD'd a couple times out on the street while she's, you know, clean and sober.
Actual clean and sober.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. For real this time. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
I OD'd a couple times. I go to jail a couple more times. Go to my dad rescues me and says, you know, come to Winder. You know, you need some structure, son. Right. So I'm like, yeah, as long as I'm not homeless, help me out. So I go over there, go to the Salvation Army downtown. And yeah, I mean, it worked for a little while while I was there, you know. And then while there, her counselor was having us do marriage counseling through her program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to work on it then.
So, but it sounds like you, it didn't stick for you right away.
No, it did not.
Okay.
And he was, so I was a week from transitioning or graduating from the program. And a week before, like, he told me that he got kicked out of his program for doing Kratom. And I had to decide right then, like, I just can't. Like, if I graduate this program and we stay together and he's doing Kratom still, mm-hmm. you know, then I'm not going to be able to stay sober, you know? And so I made that decision and it was hard, but it's what I needed to do, what I'd never done before, mm-hmm. you know? And, I don't know. Like, I remember the first year I was out, like I would call and check on him just to make sure he was alive, you know, because after the Kratom thing, obviously it like snowballed into all the hard stuff. And I remember one day he was like, I just can't, I just want to die, you know? And I was mm-hmm. like, well, what am I supposed to tell your kids?
Yeah.
You right. know, like that's if that's real. What you need to do, yeah. do it. But what the hell am I supposed to tell your kids? And thank God that that didn't happen. I think it came close a few times, you know. And then, you know, he dated somebody else. I dated somebody else. And we were still married, but not, you know, separated, whatever. And yeah. And I had finally come to accept that, like, this is it's just not we're not gonna be able to be together. And you gone to Valor. No, what happened before you went to Valor? Like the last time?
I went to jail again.
Yeah, but you're, what happened then?
I'm a veteran, I go to
but
jail.
But what happened?
Yeah,
what
you
happened?
Come in, they're like, hey, what's up?
What happened though? The turning point though of what happened this time? that was different from all the other times when you were at that hotel?
I mean, this last time, so I got arrested in December of 19. And like, I'm in jail and I'm just like, I give up. I surrender. It's over with. And the minute I get out, I start getting challenged with suggestions that I don't want to take. Or that I don't know the reason behind the suggestion. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, do this. Why don't you not go get a job right away? Why don't you work on you? Why don't you go to counseling? Why don't you go to therapy? Why don't you just do other things? And I'm thinking the people that I trusted, there's a motive. Like, what's the angle? Like, I'm so street ingrained in my brain in this prison and this jail. And like,
yeah,
it's just this, like, why would you want to help me? Mm-hmm. What's in it for you? Mm. And that was always the motive. And this time it was like, because these people showed up in jail, you know, like out of nowhere, they want nothing in return. It wasn't about money. Hey, what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And that was like a turning point for me that maybe this is real. Maybe this does work, you know?
Wow. And so you gave it a try.
Gave it a shot. Yep.
Yeah. So did you go into a treatment or?
I did. Okay. I went back to the place that I had got kicked out of in Marietta, a sober living place. And me and the director are super close. And he was like, hey, man, like you need to. The first suggestion was like, hey, send me all of your money. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's big.
That's huge, you know?
Yeah.
He was like, you don't need to walk around. Like you just got out of jail. You have 30 days sober. Like I had a paycheck right when I went to jail, right? Mm-hmm. So. And then one got mailed to that sober living. So, I mean, it's not like a ton of money, but it's $2,000-ish.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm 30 days in.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm like, let's go. That's a good hotel and a good weekend, you know? So I was just like, man. But I was at a point where I was just willing enough to say, you know what? Like, this guy's not, he doesn't need my money. He's not, that's not the point behind this. And I did it. Venmo all my money.
Wow.
And then, like, asked him for an allowance. Hey, I need cigarettes. I need this. I need that. Mm-hmm. And he would just Venmo me back $50, $100, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but so did you guys start communicating once he starts getting sober? How soon do you guys start just even casually talking?
Yeah. So I, you know, like I said, I would call him occasionally to make sure he was okay. And him and I both were each dating somebody else. And I had... a friend of mine who's a notary, we went over and to the program he was at, and he and I signed divorce papers, because, you know, we just did. And shortly after that, like, I think that same day, like all these emotions started coming up. Cause I think like I had it in my mind that like I had accepted all of this, you know, that we weren't going to be together. Finally I'd accepted it. But I never gave myself a chance to heal, you know, like I shouldn't have had a boyfriend. Like I should have been using that time after the divorce papers, you know, up until that point even to heal and not just be with someone else to, you know, kind of it be my drug. So I don't have to feel.
Yeah.
Feel
the
void.
Yeah.
And so we signed divorce papers and I noticed right away that same day that like I had some feelings coming up. And so I broke up with the guy I was dating and I just said, I need to figure out what this all is and heal, you know? And so it was shortly, I don't know how long after that, that like we had this dog together, Malice, and she was living with me. And I was
Malice. Play a move. Yeah. The dog.
I had Malice in the back seat and we were going to go visit dad, you know, bring Malice to visit him. And
we signed divorce papers on Saturday. This is 8 days later, the following Sunday. Yeah.
And so he called me when I was on the way and he's like, you can't come. And I said, why not? And he said, because my sponsor and, you know, the director, don't think it's a good idea. You know, we just signed divorce papers. It's not a good idea. And so he actually listened to that. And that was the first time I ever saw, that something was different, you know, that like, he's not just doing what he wants to do. He's taking suggestions. And I think we talked on the phone for a little bit and then we decided we wanted to try it again. But we didn't do it the way that we had always done it. We had, like, we were going to couples therapy again. We did what they suggested. We talked on the phone only for 30 days. He took me back, you know, on our first date again. And we just did things completely different than we had done before.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So we're during this time, you have a couple kids at this point.
We do. And so
where are they during this time?
We've had a couple of defects cases, because, you know, with them, when they were born, we were both still in our addictions, pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. And, so they have been with my aunt since Faith was 4 and Nolan was 6 months old. And, when I got out of treatment, you know, we would visit them, or I would visit them. We visited them before we both got into treatment. But, we went to court and like a year ago, I guess, and not court, but I went to the courthouse to see, like, 'cause I was so messed up. I didn't know, did my aunt adopt them? Did she, you know, like, yeah. I really didn't know. And it was still temporary guardianship, even though it had been years, you know? And I wanted to do right by them this time, because I knew that, like, I was truly capable of loving them how they deserved to be loved, and real love, not just love how I knew it to be loved, you know, when I was so unhealthy. And we talked about it and realized that, like, who am I, who are we to take, especially our son, who has everything he's known is my aunt, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how selfish of us to do that to him.
Right.
And I went back and forth, like, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right thing for him? And at the end of the day, like, that has been the answer that I found the most peace with, is allowing him to stay with my aunt, who he's known as his mom, you know, for his whole life. Mm-hmm. And just to be in his life, for both of us to be in his life. And he's a difficult one, you know, like, he's, Richard and him just went and had their own little date together. Was it last week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and so he's slowly reaching out, you know, and I think our job today is to just be available, you know, because right. He will be ready one day, and I want to be ready for him when he is ready.
Yeah.
So the kids were always taken care of, by my aunt, but I know the pain I have felt from my parents dying, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've probably felt a lot from your parents' divorce and stuff, and so I know that we have hurt them tremendously, you know, and there's nothing we can do about that except move forward and do what we're doing today. And it's hard, it's painful still, you know, yeah. But that's what my decisions have done. And, I can, sit with them today. I can process them today, and I can feel them today and not have to numb them.
Yeah.
Like I always did.
So he's, the middle child. So he's mm-hmm. in high school.
Mm-hmm.
How old is he?
He's 14.
14, mm-hmm. Yes. And, yeah. Well, we have to go. So he, and you have a older child, too, mm-hmm. who's 18, mm-hmm. and then you're pregnant.
Yeah.
So with the 18-year-old, do you guys have a relationship there, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because she was older. I mean, she was 4, but we were closer before she went to live with my aunt.
Yeah.
And we're still close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So, but now, the idea of getting that relationship back with the kids and custody, that doesn't happen like right away, right? Because you guys are first reconciling. And mm-hmm. so when you're in that process of reconciling, and you're listening to the counselors mm-hmm. and the people, right, about mm-hmm. talking first and then dating mm-hmm. and going on dates and sober dates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's that sober dating like for you? Because up until that point, I mean, every time you guys got together, mm-hmm. you were getting high.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So does it, like, when you're getting together again for that first time, if you can kind of mm-hmm. go back to that, it's like, is that temptation there? Is it like, okay, do you feel like that? You know what I'm saying? Because you're intertwined with another human, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so much of what you guys were connected was substances were mm-hmm. a piece of that, right?
Right.
Right.
So that first time dating, was it hard to see each other in that sober light?
I mean, I remember it being kind of,
I think it was awkward.
Yeah. I was going to say a little bit weird at first. And yeah. I was like, before I even left treatment, like, I was full of fear. Like mm-hmm. I'd always been to treatment, so many treatments before, and I never stayed sober. And like, but I did have that time after to kind of like get my bearings and get into a routine after treatment and stuff. And so I was very black and white when I first got sober. Like, things had to be, you know, they were either this or they were that. They were either good or they were bad. Like, yeah. I have to go to this many meetings a week or I will not stay sober, you know? And so I think that for me, like, that definitely helped when it came to us reuniting. And that first date was was awkward. It was weird because we've been together so long, but it was awkward because we were different people, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Wait, were you guys both in treatment when you guys started dating, or were you living together?
No. So I had been out of treatment. Okay. I lived with a girlfriend who completed the same program I did. And he was like 9 months at his program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so you're like in a sober living.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things was like, you have to finish your program before you can come and live, you know?
Yeah.
Like there was just certain things that, I don't know, that we just did differently this time.
You know? Yeah. And part of it is you guys both had your individual sponsors
mm-hmm. yes.
and guided mentors. Yep. And then you had a couple's mentor that was guiding you through the whole
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything that you didn't listen to? Did you cheat a little bit? Did you cut a couple corners, or did you stay really true to that whole process?
No, I think we really did. I mean, we didn't, like, we did the counseling for a little while, and then, like, when things would come up, like, we would go. We mm-hmm. haven't been in a while, and I don't know if we've really, I mean, we don't fight that much. Like, I think since we've been back together, we've had, like, maybe three. I mean, we don't. We get along pretty
They're
well.
They're all her fault, too.
They're all. Yeah. And so how long have you been back together since?
2 years.
Was it 2 years? You moved in October 2 years ago, but we were, yeah, so a little over 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And did you get remarried?
We have not been remarried, no.
Okay. Yeah. Not, at least not technically.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
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 We never, the divorce never was finalized.
No.
Oh.
No, we just signed the papers. We hadn't been to court.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She just signed that, had me notarize them at a sober living.
Yeah.
And then it was like.
We never went to court.
Yeah. So we never got actually divorced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, right.
Okay.
We've been married the whole time.
Yeah. And so, I know we're kind of jumping around, but now where you're at is, I don't know, because. I don't know if anyone can see on the camera, but because you're kind of down now, but there's a new mm-hmm. addition coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when's, tell us about that.
His name is Maddox. He is due on the 12th of December.
Yeah.
And
that's like day after yesterday, tomorrow.
Right. It's very soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I always dreamed of having three children. And, It's been a process because I wanted to make sure, like when the idea came into my mind, like I wanted to make sure that like I wasn't trying to replace our other two kids, you know? And so I talked with my sponsor, we talked about it. And it was a process. Like that's when I went to the courthouse and I wanted to make sure that we were doing right by our oldest two children first before we, you know, got the IUD and all of that kind of stuff and started trying. And, our other two were not planned, you know, which love them to death, but they weren't. And this one was planned. And it's just like, it's something that him and I told him that it's something that I want, you know, and it took him a little while for him to kind of get on board. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. It's so different this time. It's so, it's just crazy because I never thought that like this would be our life today. You know, and I get emotional because, you know, like we almost didn't make it. Like there was a lot of times we didn't make it. We almost left our kids without parents and knowing what that feeling is like, it's like, but still doing a behavior that could end up in the same result is craziness. It's insanity, you know? But yeah, we're very excited about Maddox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Do you have questions? You've been pretty quiet.
What did you say in the beginning?
Well, that I'm stuck with you?
Yeah,
you're
stuck with me.
You remember that Huey Lewis song? Mm. I'm so happy to be stuck with you.
Oh, you're making it romantic now?
I can't see that you're happy to be stuck with
you. Oh, yeah.
You.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jam. I get it now.
Y'all gonna be playing it on the way home.
Yeah.
I know it. All right.
What? Yeah. Well, no. I just want to...
No.
Well, we're talking about the present right now, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah, we're jumping around.
Yeah, and so then, you know, going... You know, in the past, right, mm-hmm. was 20 years mm-hmm. of just addiction, mm-hmm. right? And you said you guys went to different treatments and getting help, mm-hmm. right? And so it never stuck with you.
Right.
I'm just wondering, like, how is it because you weren't ready, you weren't willing, or like how, like, did someone make you go to treatment, and is that why you didn't stuck around? So I just want to know, like, how does that look like? You know, coming from normie that, right. you know, you go to rehab and then you're supposed to be like fine or mm-hmm. healed or whatever. But yeah. So going to different treatments. Right. Yeah.
And I don't think I think I've been to like 6 or 7
okay.
and some I stayed longer than others. A couple I graduated, like I went to treatment when the defects cases were happening, like 3 different programs back to back to back within like 18 months or 2 years. They were 6-month program, would get close to graduating, get kicked out. Just back to back to back. And so I was always forced by, I never went on my own. It was either defects, mm-hmm. trying to keep our kids. This last time I was mandated for a year and some people get mandated and they're just doing it for the courts. You know, I'm very grateful that I got mandated and 'cause it's what I needed. Right. And I did what I needed to do, but I think it's a mixture of all of the things that you said, not being ready, mm-hmm. being, distracted, by worrying what he was doing all the time. Mm. Thinking that I didn't have a problem or I could do it myself. Like, I think it was a mixture of things. I don't think I'll ever be able to pinpoint what it was. And I don't think that it really matters. I think the most important part is I remember what it was like to not be able to stop sticking a needle in my arm. And the most important thing for me today, of course, besides taking care of my own recovery and sobriety, is to help other women.
Right.
Because I remember what it was like, Yeah. And sometimes you just want to shake them. But, like, mm-hmm. I know I was that person that people wanted to shake sometimes. And,
right.
So I was mandated this last time.
Right. Did we talk about what was your turning point?
Just knowing I was going to die, like accepting the fact that this is going to be the end of my life, like I'm going to die an addict and that's it. And, being mandated to actually a sober living, getting kicked out twice or 3 times, ODing there twice. And there was a 2-week period before I went into the extension. And I remember that 2-week period, I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm either going to kill myself or I need to go get some help. Besides the fact that I'm mandated, I need to go.
Right.
And so just like, I had lost everything, right. Him and I weren't living together. My kids were with my aunt. I was going to have a warrant out probably, which I did end up having a warrant, but I didn't find out until 6 months later.
Okay.
While I was in treatment. But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. So, there was a question for him, but I was just really focused on her. So then while she was, going through that, you were also in your addiction, like really like severe too as well. Right. And you guys weren't living together. Mm-mm. And
right.
Yeah. But you were going to jail and were you like homeless? Were you both homeless or
what got me here today? Is that I don't know the question.
Yeah, well, so like
I think we're getting confused.
Right.
We're getting confused because you can't remember where
no, we're going,
we're talking
we're going
there was
past.
An error.
I know, yes. I know. Because right. I wanted to
but
we're
I think
going
he
back.
Told he talked about his turning point.
Right. No, not his turning point.
Yeah.
While no, I'm not asking about his turning point. I'm just saying that
we're going to edit this, though.
There was a piece that you didn't share about your turning point, though, that I think is a huge piece.
What piece is that?
When you went to that hotel.
Okay.
I think that. Share it.
Yeah. So I mean, I was getting high, and
this is the bad thing about your wife knowing all your shit.
Yeah.
She gets to go. Hey, tell that. Really jacked up story about your life.
But yeah. This is where I think that this is where you're like,
yeah.
I was living with some friends, renting a room. It was a sober living, but not really. Everyone was getting high together and just go to work and pay the bills. So I got so messed up. It's like a Saturday morning, like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm just breaking the bathroom mirror and just doing crazy shit and stuff. Can we cuss on this?
Yeah. It happens.
No.
I just cussed.
So. Right. Yeah.
So yeah, my buddy was like, "Hey man, you gotta get out of here. You know, you're a disaster." So they dropped me off at this hotel, this shady, like $50 a night hotel. I mean, it was, and I go in there and I'm like, I'm on all kind of drugs. I'm on heroin, meth. I drink a bunch of G. I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I start tearing this room up for some reason. It's not my style. I don't break stuff. I mean, I'll tear my own life up, but I'm not going to like tear your house up.
Right.
Especially a hotel room in my name under my credit card. Oh, yeah. Right. Would be the dumbest move ever, which I did. And then I got so scared when in this hotel room by myself that I called the cops. I hid my phone for myself for some reason. So I used the hotel phone, dial 911. Once they answered, it became real. Oh shit, these people, this is really the cops. So I hang up the phone. Oh. Well, what happens, of course, they call right back. I don't get the call to my room. The front desk gets it.
Yeah.
So this dude, Robert or something, comes over and he was like knocking on the door. I open the door through the little peephole, the little sliding lock, and the room is trashed. Beds are flipped up. I flooded the hotel room and they take me to jail. Wow. That's what got me right here today.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. You know what's interesting about that is it's like you literally came to the end of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To where you lost complete like connection to, you know, I don't want to get weird, but it's almost spiritual in nature.
For sure. It was a divine.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
That was the first time I actually thought I was going to die. I've had mom, dad, family, sister, brother, counselors, you know, say, dude, you're going to kill yourself. But I never believed that. You know, I was indestructible, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not me. You're going to die, but not me.
Right.
You know, so. Yeah. But that time, I was like, yeah.
So, and while this happens, you're in treatment.
I think I was already out of treatment, but I was only calling occasionally to check on him and make sure he was alive and all of that. But we weren't seeing each other.
So you were spared seeing him in that state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
So
what else you got?
Well, I do have a lot of questions here, but that was a kind of form of a psychosis, right?
Yes.
Would you say that? Mm-hmm. Because I do remember you went to a psychosis, right? Now, I get to call you on your shift. But I do remember that because we were in California and you were by yourself here in Roswell. And it was like, oh my gosh, like every minute he called me. Mm-hmm. And it was like just erratic kind of conversations, mm-hmm. You know, and my sister was like, what? Because she didn't know anything about his addiction or any of our family. And so she was wondering why I was always on the phone with you. And she was getting pissed off because I wasn't spending time with her or whatever. And so he finally said, you know what? You know, this is like 5 days of him being, you know, in psychosis. And finally, he said something, and I was, like, totally worried because I couldn't get a hold of him, and he just shut down, you know? And I just thought that, you know, he either was, like, overdosing or something because no one knew.
Right.
He didn't have any friends here, or the neighborhoods were our friends, but they didn't know anything about his addiction. And so finally he, you know, he partied with whoever your dealers, I don't know what you did, but anyways, the next day I'm like, okay, I need to go home, mm-hmm. and you know, I need to see what's going on with you. So yeah, that was, you know, I mean you had a lot of psychosis events, I think.
Yeah, I've never heard you tell that part of the story. It's interesting. I've never heard it from that side. Yeah.
So yeah, I was kind of like, of course, you know, you want to focus on your loved one and, you know, someone that you love. And so you try to fix it. Well, for me, because I, you know, part of the codependency.
It wasn't like you flew home and, you know, took me to church. You flew home and did drugs with me.
Did we do drugs?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. So, and
that's
I don't
that's
really
supportive. That's true. That's true support. Right. That's true support right there.
Right. And I think too.
Can't beat them, join them.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about sex. Right.
Uh oh. You brought it up.
Right. So, because you're in recovery, right? And what do they say? So when you are in recovery and you say in early recovery, don't date because, you know, you tend to focus more on that person, right. And mm-hmm. you get kind of obsessed with the feeling of those feelings and mm-hmm. then the yeah. sex and stuff like that. So I know that for him, after his recovery, sex was a major part of, you know, like it's almost like it was another addiction, mm-hmm. obsession. And so those are the things that we had to work on, right? Yeah. Was that true for you guys, where sex was kind of like, I wouldn't say a problem, but more like another addiction, you know?
I mean, we don't have sex.
Right now, I'm not alone. Yeah, right. But, you know, that has all, like, that was one, in my addiction, like, it was easy. Sex was easy because I didn't have to worry about, like, oh, God, what does he think about my body? Or what is, you know what I mean? And for, right. like, that's something that him and I actually went to counseling for, because we've been together for so long, and I still feel, not that something's wrong with me, but, like, the intimacy is very hard for me. And so it's something that, like, we will continue to work on. You know, right now it's easy because we're not allowed to because of my, right. you know, the pregnancy.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I mean, I don't think it's in recovery, it's been an addiction. I think it's been the opposite. And I know that a lot of it's on me, and that's something that I have to work on mm-hmm. personally. He jokes about it a lot. It's not that we never have sex. It's just,
I mean, obviously once. Yes. At, right. at least once. I got proof of that one.
Yeah. yeah.
There's the receipt.
You know, yeah. that's my, I don't know where it comes from. Maybe something in child, I don't know, but it's something that I do need to work on and right. have some more therapy surrounding that.
I do remember.
Well, and that's the thing about sex. Sex yeah. is such, it's such a deeply woven thing mm-hmm. into our, you know, I mean, it's wired into our biology, right? right? To mm-hmm. procreate right. and to do mm-hmm. this thing, right? And it also depends on, you know, the drugs that you use, mm-hmm. right? So my thing was, I did a lot of meth in high school and mm-hmm. cocaine. And so there's a lot of, like, correlating pleasure centers in the brain right. between, you know, sex and an orgasm and what the cocaine is like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a lot of correlation. So it's very common, like, for people who are addicted to kind of cross kind of addict. But then I think there's also, like, I think for me, like, as I've continued on this journey of recovery, right, like, a piece that took me a very long time is connecting with myself.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's something that you were able to address early. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's layers to it. Right?
Right.
And so I think that for me, it was such a form of connection in my using with her, right? With you. It's such a form of connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was like, that's the ultimate kind of connection, mm-hmm. right? And so when you get sober, it's like you're still trying to, like, recreate that connection.
Right.
And so it takes time to learn how to, you know, connect to yourself mm-hmm. and God mm-hmm. and that whole thing.
Is, yeah.
You know, a beautiful, wonderful, painful right. unfolding, right, that continues to happen. But I do think that that's probably a big issue for people, like, in well, probably in all our cases here, right, where you had a relationship that had this dynamic, mm-hmm. a sexual dynamic with substances, mm-hmm. and now there's a new sexual dynamic mm-hmm. with the same people, but without the substance, yeah. it changes, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you bring in, you know, insecurities and all of those things. There's just a lot that goes into it, and you know, and thank you for not giving up on me because of that. But, you know, I think I'm willing and we're willing together to do what we need to do, because I know that it's an important part of a marriage. You know,
right.
I know that, it, like you said, it's God given and it's okay and it's good. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Any other shit you want to bring out of the closet.
Right. We are in this together, right?
We are all in this together.
Okay. So, okay. So why are partners told to focus on their own recovery and not the relationship?
I think because it's a distraction. Their own recovery versus the relationship. I mean, I have to know who I am, right? So the relationship was toxic. If I focus on that, it's going to be just more toxicity, you know? But I think once we got to know who we were as individual, we could become that whole person or the whole couple, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. No.
Yeah. Good answer.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so I'm going to read this, right? So during this time, you develop many unhealthy coping mechanisms, like becoming extremely dependent on those who enabled you and supported them throughout the behavior, right? And that's, and so how are establishing and implanting your own coping mechanisms learned through healthy relationships? So you both are still going to counseling and therapy and then going through groups and support, or you have sponsors. So how are you guys dealing with the, you know, I guess the new coping mechanism?
So I, like, we have a therapist that we can go to anytime it's needed.
Yeah.
We haven't been in a while. I have a sponsor. We both have sponsors.
Okay.
I sponsor. He sponsors.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
We go to meetings individually. We go together.
Yeah.
I do a lot for the program that I went to. And I think that as long as I learned a lot of healthy coping skills and treatment.
Okay.
You know, about boundaries and codependency and all of that. And, you know, there was someone who, his mom's ex-fiance, was very, like, he would let me move in with him, like, right now if I called him, you know? And he's always asking me, he was my biggest enabler. He's always asking me, like, what can I get for you? What can I get from addicts? What can I? And so I had to tell him, you know, it's not that I don't care about you and I appreciate everything that you've done for me. However, like, I have to step back and really, like, do this not myself, but like without him, you know what I mean? And so like, I'll always care about you and I appreciate what you've done, but you know, he's asked what he can get from addicts. And so I told him, like, there's, you know, you can get him a swing, and he's asked if he can get this and this and this. And I just tell him no, you know, because in order for me to have that same relationship is for me to be using, you know?
Right.
And so it's the same thing with our relationship. Like, I don't know. Ours is just, it just works. And I think it's because I know it's because we have our own lives individually before we bring our lives together.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys pray together?
We have, we don't as much as we should, but we are going to church this Sunday.
Really?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Watch out. You got to sneak it in the side door.
Yeah. No, we talked about, because I do want, like, my.
We used to go to church a lot.
We did. And my spirituality, and I think everybody's in recovery, is at least from my own experience, is ever changing. It's ever evolving. You know, like, my God is just, I mean, I think, how do I put this? Like, we all have our own sense of what a higher power is, right? But it's something outside of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what it is.
Not you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Not me, not him.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is where it's evolving, you know? Like, I think both of us pretty much at the same time got this yearning or desire to try going back to church, or we wanted to go back to church. And so it's taken us a few weeks, but we found one. His friend has a friend who's a pastor, and so we're going to go try it out on Sunday.
Awesome. Yeah. So do you do any, like, I know you mentioned going to meetings together, but do you read any devotionals together, or, I mean, literature together, or do any of that kind of stuff, or is it mainly you keep that pretty separate?
Yeah, we kind of keep it separate, and I think, I mean, obviously it would be beneficial if we did it together, too. We don't.
We do assignments together.
Like, yeah, we haven't in a while, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that we're not open to it. We just.
Yeah. Well, I just think of, like, some literature that, like, says, like, you know, if, you know, if you have a spiritual path, you attend to that. And sometimes you might integrate your daily spiritual disciplines
with your spouse. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I was just curious. Yeah. I mean, we don't pray together often. Although we were having a fight and I did invoke the name of Jesus, but I don't think, I don't know that it was actually a prayer. It was more like a, but,
every time I pray and this is during a nighttime, he'll fall asleep.
Like she prays forever, dude. It's so long. My prayer, so long.
It's like a poem, you know? And, and then I hear him snoring. I'm like, okay.
You did it.
So we try to make it, you know?
So,
Yeah. Well,
and I think that that's why maybe that yearning was there to start going to church together. Because it's something that, you know, has been brought upon my heart. And I think upon his as well, yours as well.
I think it does help, you know, that there's like a higher authority that both partners, you know, that both of us are kind of subservient to, right? Mm-hmm. Something that's greater than us.
Right.
Collectively us, right? And and I think at the same time, we both have an individual kind of understanding of what we think God is, right? Because we are just guessing.
Yeah, right.
But it does help. Like, it's helped us to kind of have that common, that common thing that's kind of guiding us, right? And it's good to hear that, like, as you guys continue to grow together and that you're expanding and looking at, okay, what's some good expressions of that, right? Okay. Is there anything that is kind of unsaid or something? Because I have one more question for you. But I just, is there anything that you feel like we should have covered or that was really key and important for you to share?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So this question is for someone who's in kind of like where you were, you know, 3 years ago, four years ago, right? And they're struggling at this point. They have somebody that they really love and care about and they built a life with, but there's this substance thing happening. What would you say to that individual?
What would I say to him or to
Well, whoever? What would you say to someone who might be listening to this and they might be in a position where you guys were 3 years ago?
Yeah. The only thing that I knew that I could do, was pray for him. So to pray for that person, know that I can't control it, know that I can't get intertwined in it or I will be back in it. And just really have trust and faith that like whatever happens, like it's not anything that I did. And the only thing that I could do was to take care of myself, you know? It doesn't mean that it was easy because it was not, and it won't be easy, but we can't save other people, you know, all we can do. And I think I realized too that like the best thing that I can do is to keep doing what I'm doing and be that light and hope and pray that like the other person, my husband, could see that and want that life too.
Yeah.
You know?
What about for you?
Was that the question?
Yeah.
I thought the question was what that tells me that was listening.
Yeah. She answered it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking like
I just made it personal, but that's what I would tell them.
I would tell somebody who's listening, like, I wish I would have got this sooner. I wish it wouldn't take, you know, I got sober at 37, right? So I'm 40. So 3 years. I wish I would have latched on when I was way younger. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't ready then, you know? For me, this side is so much better. And I thought it was all just made up or manipulation or like you guys can get sober, but it's not for me. You don't know my story. I'm different. I'm special, you know, and I'm not I am, but not in that way. Addiction affects us all the same way. It just destroys us, destroyed me and my family. And, you know, so for me, it's all comes down to surrender. Like once I finally stopped making the decisions that I knew best and let somebody else that I could trust make those decisions, it was a game changer.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. All right. So this has been an episode of The Most High Show. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And
thank
I didn't say it, but that's you were in the seats of service there in sharing your story and sharing
the pain and all the difficult things that you've been through in hopes that it's going to help someone else.
Yeah.
And so thank you for being so open and honest and willing to do that. And if you have any questions and you need some help, reach out to us. If you see this on social media, you can DM us. And we would love to connect you with qualified counselors and coaches and people who might be able to help you to navigate your own recovery or your own relationships to help you to get to a place where you're healthy and healing and growing in the right direction. So thank you for listening.
Bye.